we're just a lot of talk. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure, TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
McLean and McGahee, he stay in the backfield. Give it to McGahee, straight ahead. He's got a hole, he's got 35, 40, one man to beat. Stiff arm to that, he could go. Raider side, 30, 20, 10, 5, lunges, touchdown. Willis McGahee, 77 yards.
Chargers down 4 points. Bullock fakes the handoff to Bennett, throwing wide open. Colbert, touchdown! Right side of the end zone. San Diego leads it with 35 seconds to go.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Coming up, our wild card weekend edition of Pro Football Weekly.
What's up next for the Redskins with Mike Shanahan as the coach? Will the Panthers bring back Julius Peppers, and what is Brandon Marshall's future in Denver?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. Welcome to our wild card weekend edition of Pro Football Weekly. The Way We Hear It features the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly, and we begin this first week of the postseason with senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric, down in Washington, Mike Shanahan, it didn't take long, landed as the Redskins' new head coach, 5 years, $7 million a year as their head coach.
And if you believe new GM Bruce Allen, you know, this whole thing came together in about 24 hours, maybe 48 if you include the plane ride home after the season-ending loss to San Diego. You know, just watching, you know, first impressions from watching his first press conference, Shanahan looked like a guy who was a 14-year head coach, authoritative, you know, obviously very enthusiastic about his new situation with Daniel Snyder. They've known each other for 10 years. It's an interesting relationship. Shanahan has said that Snyder joked about wanting to trade for him when he was the coach for the Broncos. So, you know, it's going to be a very powerful combination with him and Bruce Allen. Now, whether they can get this team on track after a 14-12 season remains to be seen.
You know, I think the thing that's so intriguing about this, Eric, is that he got not only the head coaching job, but that executive VP football operations job. And what that usually suggests is that he's going to have control of personnel and of the roster. And in one respect, you'd think that's a good thing, because certainly Bruce Allen isn't the guy you want doing that. But the flip side of it is, when Holmgren got that power in Denver, that's when everything started to go south.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And you know, Shanahan addressed that on Wednesday, talked about the fact that, you know, the media kind of ran with this whole final say thing, but he said he never had to invoke that power, you know, that it was always a group decision, and that's how he wants it to be in Washington. He wants it to be between Daniel Snyder, between Bruce Allen, between the whoever they add for their personnel staff, as well as Shanahan.
Eric, forgive me for asking just an obvious question here, but what is Allen's job then? Is he just the guy who kind of carries, you know, coffee to Shanahan? What's the deal here?
I would say that if you want a sort of a cheeky title, it would be like the mouthpiece. You know, he would be the guy who's going to be put in front of the cameras. He'll be there on draft day. He'll be there in the big splashy free agents that they're going to sign, just as they always have. So, again, he's going to be part of the personnel process. Obviously, Shanahan, with that title of executive vice president, wields a lot of power as well. So I think his managing of the salary cap, if there is one, we have to mention that, of course, is going to be a big part of it. That's probably the best thing he was known for doing in Tampa Bay.
Well, yeah, and guys, of course, the main reason he's there is for marketing purposes, to try and make the connection to his father, George Allen, and the great legacy and history with the Redskins. And there will be business issues for him to oversee. But, Eric, just going back to that Shanahan comment about having the power but not invoking it, we hear that everywhere these days with teams where things went wrong, because nobody wants to take responsibility for it. But the bottom line is, you can't make draft choices and do rosters by consensus, you know, by getting a bunch of votes and going with majority rules. And so at the end of the day, there's still the same issue there. I'm sure Shanahan doesn't want to talk about it, but it's going to be very curious to see exactly who those personnel people are and how much power they have once the Redskins put them in place.
Absolutely. And critical decisions have to be made on a couple guys who are on the roster. I mean, you're talking about Jason Campbell, either a restricted free agent if there's no CBA, or an unrestricted free agent if they do get a new collective bargaining agreement. And then Clinton Portis, a guy who Shanahan traded away. And if you listen to the comments, it was really interesting, because Campbell, he talked about a bright future ahead and he hopes to, you know, work with him. When it came to Portis, though, you know, he was very guarded, and he said, you know, I haven't been around here, I haven't seen him, it would be unfair to comment on him. So, a little different take, and you have to think that Shanahan's going to have a lot of say on what happens with those two guys.
Meanwhile, the New York Giants fired their defensive coordinator, Bill Sheridan. Where are they going now in terms of their situation? You know, as far as they fell, especially the last 2 weeks of the season, somebody had to go. If it wasn't Tom Coughlin, it was going to be the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, a couple names have arisen, Wayne. Perry Fuel, who was recently just the interim head coach of the Buffalo Bills and reportedly did a pretty nice job there. He was with Coughlin as a defensive backs coach in Jacksonville. He's certainly one of the candidates that the Giants are expected to reach out to and may already have reached out to. But here's another name to keep in mind. Pepper Johnson, the old Giants linebacker who's been with the New England Patriots for the last decade as their defensive line coach. Some say Bill Belichick was kind of grooming him to be the coordinator at one point, possibly an assistant head coach, that sort of thing. Maybe even a successor to Belichick one day. He's somebody who's supposedly reportedly very interested in this Giants position. Other names you have to probably throw out there. You know, even though Dom Capers obviously has a history with him, we don't expect him to leave the Packers. Dick Geron is somebody to keep in mind. You know, people say even Romeo Crennel, who's out of work right now and has experience with Coughlin. So those are a couple names to keep in mind.
All right, now, one other club I've got to ask you about, Eric. We've got about a minute left here. No matter what happens, Jerry Jones absolutely refuses to give Wade Phillips a vote of confidence. And maybe that's smart, but you would think at this point he could at least be a little more positive than what recent comments indicate.
There have been some comments that lead you to believe that, oh, okay, he's kind of softening. He's going to extend this thing. They hold a team option for next year. Look, you know, the Cowboys have won the division. They've kind of streaked into the playoffs. They're one of those teams that everybody's buzzing about the possibility of them upending the Vikings or the Saints. But you're right. There hasn't been any firm endorsement yet. And so I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens in the playoffs.
Senior editor Eric Edholm will be back with more Way We Hear It when this wild card edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, our wild card weekend edition. We continue with the Way We Hear It with executive editor Dan Arkish. And Dan, big news in Chicago. Everybody was kind of waiting. Would Lovie Smith be fired? Would he stay? If he stayed, what would happen? Well, Lovie stayed. Lovie's going to get a new defensive coordinator, I guess. And the offensive staff with Ron Turner is gone. So tell us about the workings in Chicago this first week of the postseason.
Well, Wayne, the focus now quickly shifts to a search for new coordinators on both sides of the ball. Early speculation as far as the offensive coordinator goes, the names most prominently being mentioned are Jeremy Bates, who worked with Jay Cutler in Denver as a quarterback coach. He's at USC right now, and Cutler has highly endorsed him, and so that's obviously a big selling point. You got to make the franchise guy happy. But another intriguing name is Mike Martz. He's been mentioned throughout the latter part of the season. Obviously, the greatest show on turf, has a good track record. And guys, if we're talking about what amounts to a one-year deal, if Lovie is indeed gone, if the Bears don't make the playoffs, you know, Martz is probably the most capable of anybody to stage a turnaround in this offense in, you know, in a one-year's time. But there are a lot of things that come into play, a lot of issues.
Well, and let's take a step back here, Dan, because for anybody who witnessed the press conference, it was really kind of an embarrassment to the Bears organization. A lot of heat, not only on Lovie Smith, but on President and CEO Ted Phillips, General Manager Jerry Angelo. A lot of people believe that one of the reasons Lovie Smith has struggled so bad is because his roster isn't up to par and he hasn't been given the talent to work with. Some felt all three would go. All three were retained. Each one stood up in front of the microphone, one more defiant than the last, and basically said, we think we're a good football team. We think we have good talent. We just have to do a better job. And what was really telling was that Lovie Smith, in the face of all this alleged change, said he actually has no plans of changing anything. He's going to play the same defense. Offensively, people keep reporting the offensive staff was let's go. But what's interesting is that running backs coach Tim Spencer and wide receiver coach Darrell Drake kept their jobs. Nobody's really sure why, except for their Lovie's guys who've been there with him from the beginning. So in what is being projected and suggested as all this change, the reality is that there's pretty much none.
No, I'd have to agree with that. And I'd say that the reaction, for the most part, is probably negative. But Ted Phillips, you know, made a big point of the whole continuity factor, and it is what it is. You know, I suppose they're looking at kind of a Marvin Lewis type situation here, where Lovie's going to be able to turn things around. But yeah, obviously there are all kinds of problems that need to be addressed, you know, especially on defense. Lovey saying that he's going to adamantly stick with that cover too. I mean, there's got to be major changes there. And then systematically on offense also, although it does seem to me, Hub, like he might be willing to really open things up a little bit more toward the pass.
Guys, how much of this whole decision process had to do with the fact that where we are with the collective bargaining agreement, there's going to be a 2010 season, but there may not be a 2011 season, and teams just don't want to be paying two coaching staffs, especially coming up on a season when they may not play football at all?
Well, you know, Angelo had said a few weeks back that money was not an issue, but obviously it's the driving force, and with all the uncertainty, you know, with the collective bargaining agreement, it's not a really great time to really, you know, put forth a long-term type of situation, you would think, and they have the commitment in hand, and they, I think, want to take a more safe route.
Well, and there's actually a fair amount of inner turmoil in the McCaskey family as well right now, with several of the eight McCaskey brothers jockeying for position, wanting to have a louder voice at the table. And the combination of the financial situation and not knowing what the line of succession could be after Virginia, I think, is what forced them to stay pat at this time.
That's a lot of jockeys, Hub, I'll tell you. Meanwhile, in Seattle, the search continues for a new GM. And, Dan, what can you tell us about that process?
Well, Wayne, they've pared their list down. It started off at 10. Now it's been cut in half. As of right now, the candidates appear to be in no particular order. Ravens Director of Player Personnel Eric DaCosta, Green Bay Packers Director of Football Operations John Schneider, who's also being mentioned in Cleveland, with Holmgren now, Arizona Cardinals Director of Player Personnel Steve Keim, Philadelphia Eagles General Manager Tom Heckert, and Rustin Webster, who's the interim general manager in-house guy. All of these candidates, the teams are still in the playoffs, so the search kind of continues on. For a while, we had heard that Keim was the front runner, and now it's sounding like maybe Heckert could be neck and neck with him.
Well, you know what's interesting, Dan, is Tom Heckert's name being mentioned prominently in Cleveland, too, where Mike Holmgren, who has that old connection, all these guys off the Walsh, Holmgren, Packer, Eagle tree, they all seem to come home to roost, and apparently he could be a popular choice there as well. Any chance that one of these guys gets the job and decides that one and done is enough for Jim Mora Jr. is disastrous of the way that season ended.
That still remains a very strong possibility. Now, on Thursday afternoon, Mora was going to kind of give his final address, there are all indications are that he's probably going to get another year, but it kind of depends on who comes in there. If they take a really hard look at the last quarter of a season, it's got to be one of the worst final quarters imaginable. I mean, the Seahawks, a case could be made that they might have been the worst team, you know, those last 4 weeks, and that does not reflect well on Mora.
Executive Editor Dan Arkish. More postseason news and notes coming up on Pro Football Weekly after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, I'm Wayne Larrabee. It is wild card weekend of the NFL and a lot happening around the league for those not even involved in the playoffs. So we continue with the way we hear it and welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Up in Denver, Dan, one of your teams, there's this interesting clash between Josh McDaniel and wide receiver Brandon Marshall. McDaniel, the coach, benched Marshall the last weekend of the regular season. What's the story? How are these two going to go forward into next year?
It's a good question, Wayne. As we know, the final weekend of the regular season, after things had gone so well between Marshall and McDaniels, or at least it seemed to go so well throughout the year after Marshall was suspended in training camp, McDaniels says we're going to sit him down and keep him inactive in that final game, the season finale, where the Broncos still were viable for the playoffs entering that game. And then he makes him deactive because he thinks that he's overdoing it a bit with a hamstring injury and not showing a full commitment to the team. Now, Brandon Marshall is going to be a free agent this offseason, probably going to be a restricted free agent. We don't know what's going to happen with the collective bargaining agreement negotiations, but doesn't look good right now, and with no new CBA, he'll be a restricted free agent. Now, he's coming off a Pro Bowl season. This guy has put together 1,000-yard seasons and at least 100 catches in each of the past 3 years. So he's a guy in his prime, an outstanding player. A lot of teams were going to have interest in him, and the Broncos might be willing to put him on the trade market and take some offers. It would be take a lot to get him away. It would take probably a first-round pick, maybe in a third-round pick as well, for the Broncos to really consider making pulling the trigger on a deal. But if McDaniels and Marshall can't seem to, you know, get together and work things out, that's going to be a scenario the Broncos explore.
Dan, a couple things come to mind here, though. Number one, who's going to give up a 1 and a 3 for Marshall with the baggage that he brings? I know they got a king's ransom for Jay Cutler, but Cutler is a quarterback. That makes a difference. And his off-the-field issues were not nearly as clear-cut as Marshall's are. And it seems really risky, especially for one of the smarter teams, to part with that kind of compensation to get him. That's question number one. Question number two, I guess, is a two-parter. You know, it's one thing for attitude issues, another thing for behavior issues, but when a head coach starts questioning one of his players' pain, you know, he's saying, well, you're faking, you're not really injured. To me, that's really risky with the other 52 guys in that locker room, too. I mean, I think you're really risking your own respect. And then the second part of it, and if that's the case, and you now end up dealing Marshall much like Cutler, at what point does McDaniel start to lose this whole locker room?
That's a question I was wondering about last offseason when the Cutler deal was made. Sources in Denver were telling me that for whatever reason, players really seem to take a liking to Josh McDaniels. You saw it throughout this year. This was a team that was motivated, was really excited to play for this guy. He had this team, really, you know, they started off 6-0. They are off to a great start. Obviously things tailed off at the end, but I don't think he's lost the locker room by any means. They're committed to Josh McDaniels. The players seem to think he's their guy, and, you know, questioning, Marshall's toughness, I guess, would be really what happened. He didn't question whether he was injured or not. He just said that there are other players who are hurt worse than Brandon Marshall that will be playing in that game. So he was questioning whether, you know, his threshold of pain, I suppose. In terms of whether there'll be a team out there willing to part with that for Brandon Marshall, because of, and we have to consider those baggage issues that you mentioned. Listen, the guy isn't really a cancer. I wouldn't call him that far. He's had outstanding seasons the last 3 years. He doesn't really break up the locker room. He's done some boneheaded things off the field. But I think that there might possibly, I won't rule out that the team, you know, will be willing to pay a high price for him. He's just a guy in his prime, an outstanding receiver. There's not many of those around.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, down in Carolina, there's an outstanding defensive lineman by the name of Julius Peppers. They franchised him last year. Will they franchise him again this year, the Carolina Panthers? I mean, it might cost him, what, $21.8 million to franchise him this year?
That's right, Wayne. And if you look at put those 2 years together, it'd be almost $40 million for 2 years if the Panthers would do that. They don't sound like they're interested in doing that from sources we've talked to. It sounds like the Panthers would love to have Julius Peppers back. But giving him a 1 year salary of $21.8 million isn't something they're willing to do. It's just too much of a constraint. It doesn't allow them to go out and fill other needs. There probably won't be a salary cap next season, but that kind of money still prevents them from going out and getting other players, filling needs at other positions, and they have several of those right now. So Julius Peppers, the Panthers would love to have him back, but he's probably going to get a chance to hit the open market and see what else is out there. Now, maybe if he doesn't get the deal that he thinks is waiting for him, and that might happen. You know, there might be not as much interest as he thinks there's going to be if he becomes an unrestricted free agent. Maybe he comes back to the Panthers and they're able to work something out. It's very different than the situation last offseason when he put out a statement after the season ended that said he wanted a chance to go play elsewhere. He's not probably going to take that same tack this time around.
All right, Dan, just about 30, 40 seconds left, and I've got to ask you, obviously the Raiders are a very fluid situation. As we tape, we are not positive of what Tom Cable's future is as the head coach, and a lot of that is because of the problems he had with Jamarcus Russell. Now Jamarcus Russell misses the team meeting to take a trip to Las Vegas. Cable says, well, it was an excused absence for personal reasons, but something about it still doesn't sound right.
That's right. Jamarcus Russell checked into the Palms Hotel in Las Vegas on Monday when the rest of his teammates were having a meeting to finalize this season. It gets back to the problem he's had pretty much throughout his career. He's not showing the commitment. It doesn't seem like he's a guy who really wants to come in and be good and take over and become a franchise quarterback like he was expected to be. And the question is this kind of a last straw situation in Oakland, or is this something that they're going to tolerate? And is Al Davis going to say we're going to stick with this guy? That's a question right now. Tom Cable's future, as you mentioned, Jamarcus Russell is going to be a big part of that. Determining his future. If Cable's unwilling to work with Russell, he could be gone. And the indications were at the end of the year that that's the way things were headed.
Associate Editor Dan Parr, we take a time out. You are listening to a postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly.
Welcome back to this wild card edition of Pro Football Weekly. I'm Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. The Saturday playoff games this weekend feature familiar foes, teams who saw one another on the final weekend of the regular season. We start with a rematch of the regular season finale as the Jets, who beat the Cincinnati Bengals in the Meadowlands last Sunday night to claim the final spot in the playoff field, travel to the Queen City this week to rematch with the AFC North Division champs. Our preview is provided by Bart Pasterna.
Despite laying the smackdown on the Bengals last Sunday night in Jersey, Coach Rex Ryan's Jets go into their wild card matchup at Cincinnati as underdogs.
I wasn't aware of that, but to me, we should be favorites.
You mean for this game versus the AFC North champs, right, Rex?
I mean in the whole tournament. You know the way I feel. I think we have the best defense. I know we do. I know we have the best rushing attacks. Well, I think we have a great coaching staff. I'm not going to trade our team. If I had a choice to coach any team in this tournament, I would choose this one.
And who could deny Ryan his unbridled enthusiasm after dominating Cincy in a season finale that earned gangrene a playoff berth? Of course, the Bengals sat a bunch of bodies, including 1,000-yard rusher Cedric Benson and wide receiver Chad Ochocinco, barely played thanks to a pregame injury. He slipped on some ice on the Giants Stadium field. Oh, and with nothing on the line, Coach Marvin Lewis barely showed what was in Cincinnati's deck of cards. Still, the Jets played the stingy hands dealt exceedingly well, cause enough for concern. Yet, Bengals quarterback Carson Palmer reminds us that in the playoffs, you start with a fresh deck.
We'll have more guys suited up, more guys starting, and there's a lot more on the line. We understand how big the game is. We understand it's, you know, you win or you go home. And I like our guys in that situation. I like our team with that mindset going into this game.
Meanwhile, expect the Jets to remain torqued. They haven't stopped running and tackling since they got off the plane in Indianapolis a few weeks ago. They've gotten back to what makes them dangerous, especially in a tourney. Rush the ball, eat the clock, ixnay the improv from their rookie quarterback, and play that punishing D with or without hobbling top tackler David Harris. After all, even with the ultimate shutdown man, Darrell Revis, the Jets can't count on Chad Ochocinco failing to be a distraction or slipping on the ice again.
Oh, Phil will be fine here. Our fuel's heated. We have heaters on here.
It's Wild Card Weekend, and the heat is on in more ways than one in Cincinnati. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Well, Wayne, looking at this game, the thing I really wonder about is the Jets were just so physical in New York last weekend, and the Bengals had no answer. Can the Bengals get enough from Cedric Benson, who was not there last Sunday, to take that physicality away from the Jets and open up some holes with the passing game? I think that's the key if the Bengals are going to have any chance of getting the win at home this weekend.
You know, a couple of things about the Jets, Hub. They're the number one defense overall, and they're the number one rushing team. And I wonder about that. That's a good matchup, the Jets running game against the Cincinnati run defense in this contest.
You know, Wayne, it's a great point, and there's no question both these teams run the football real well, defend the run real well. You got to think the one that finds a little bit in the passing game is going to be the winner.
Meanwhile, the Dallas Cowboys just got done hosting the Eagles for the NFC Eastern Division title. They rematch on the same field 6 nights later in primetime. Donna McQuillan has more.
The Eagles faced an embarrassing loss to Dallas at Cowboys Stadium just last weekend, a 24-0 shutout to end their regular season, as well as erasing their shot at a first-round bye and the number 2 seed in the NFC. Philadelphia fell to the number 6 seed. That means NFC East champion Dallas once again and once again at Cowboys Stadium. Quarterback Donovan McNabb says that game now has to be ancient history.
It's a whole different ball game when, you know, you're in a must-win situation and you win and you go on, you lose, you go home.
We don't have next week. We need to depend on those guys in the locker room for us to go out there and fight and have a good game.
That's Brian Westbrook. The running back knows that the Eagles, if they have any hope of winning, have to get their running game going once again. Dallas holding Philadelphia to just 37 yards rushing last week.
To be an effective offense, we have to continue to run the ball. In those past weeks, even before I came back, we were running the ball very effectively with Leonard and LeSean, and we have to get back to that.
He's referring to fullback Leonard Weaver and running back LeSean McCoy, who picked up the slack in the weeks that he was sidelined by a concussion. Each had just one carry last game. Westbrook points out the Eagles didn't take advantage of their opportunities against a solid Cowboys defense.
They're tough. You know, they're very physical up front. Linebackers do a good job. Of course, they bring the safeties down as well. So for us, we had to be very efficient. We had to be smart what we do. There were some holes there, but we had to take advantage of them.
Quarterback Tony Romo has been a big part of the Cowboys' three-game winning streak. Last out, he tossed a pair of touchdowns, going 24 for 34 for 311 yards.
He had a great game. He's putting the ball in tight spots. He was accurate. And he was on point, man. When you look at it, for the most part, we covered pretty well. He was just on fire.
That's Eagles strong safety, Quinton Michael. To win, he says, the Eagles need to disrupt Romo as well as contain the Dallas run game. Bottom line, he says, the Eagles are not ready to end their season. I'm Donna McQuillan for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, and it's interesting. I think there was so much made of the beating that the Eagles gave the Cowboys in the last regular season game last year, that 44-6 trouncing, that folks haven't noticed. Cowboys have actually had the best of the Eagles in recent years. As a matter of fact, Donovan McNabb's really struggled, just 3-6 in his last 9 starts against the Cowboys. And with that thumping they took last weekend, this is a really tough spot for the Eagles.
Yeah, no question about it, Hub. But again, playoffs are all about matchups, as you pointed out. However, Dallas hasn't won a playoff game since 1996. Coming up, the Sunday games on Wild Card Weekend when Pro Football Weekly resumes. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly. The Sunday playoff games this weekend begin in the great outdoors of the Northeast. The New England Patriots host the Baltimore Ravens. Mike Petralia reports.
It seems appropriate the Baltimore Ravens and New England Patriots are meeting in the wild card round of the AFC playoffs at Gillette Stadium. After all, these two teams won the first two Super Bowls of the past decade. Baltimore won Super Bowl 35, and the Patriots began their decade of dominance the next year. The 10-6 Patriots enter the game as AFC East champs, but just a little less dangerous after losing Pro Bowl receiver Wes Welker to a torn ACL and MCL in his left knee last Sunday in Houston. That means the Pats won't have the NFL's leading receiver for the playoffs after he accounted for 123 catches in the regular season. The Patriots head coach Bill Belichick said the team has moved on because they have no choice.
Yeah, we've covered that, and we're off of Houston. We're on to Baltimore. Players that we have out there, we'll put together the best plan we can, get our players prepared, get them ready to go. And I know that they'll all work hard to be ready for Sunday's game against Baltimore.
Patriots quarterback Tom Brady is moving on, hopeful he has another memorable postseason in store for New England fans.
We've had so many fun games around here, this time of year. So they're all really meaningful, and they all stick out. You want to come away playing your best, because if you don't play your best, then you got to sit on it for another 8 months till you're able to take the field again.
Brady was voted the NFL Comeback Player of the Year, coming back from left knee surgery to post his third career 4,000-yard passing season. But he's been banged around again this year. But Baltimore linebacker Ray Lewis isn't about to take pity on Brady or the Pats.
So we don't even, get caught up into that. Oh, Tom has this. Let's try to do that. Because as soon as you try to do that and, leave people man on man, then he hurts you. And then, he's so heroic because he's done it with 3 broken ribs and a finger. Forget all that. Bottom line is, if he's suited up, he's ready to play. So let's play.
The Patriots and Ravens met in Week 4, with the Patriots coming out on top also at Gillette Stadium by a score of 27-21. In New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Wayne, I'm not sure how much the fact that these guys played Week 4 is going to be a factor, that it was a close game, that the Patriots found their way. At that point, Tom Brady was still trying to find his way back. I think the bigger story here is looking at where these two teams are now is what do the Patriots do to make up for the loss of Wes Welker? Now, clearly, Julian Edelman, the rookie out of Kent State, is going to step in and play that position. Was pretty good last week, actually, after Welker got hurt. He had a career-high 10 catches for 113 yards. But the bottom line is, this is the playoffs. He's a rookie, and he's not Wes Welker. So can you get that offensive line to block better and Randy Moss and Lawrence Maroney to step up? Those seem to be the keys for the Patriots.
And you look at Randy Moss, Hub, and a lot of criticism of Randy late in the season, but he had a great year. 83 receptions, 1,264 yards, 13 touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to believe he could do a whole lot more than that. I think this is an intriguing matchup for two reasons. New England is third in the league in offense. Baltimore is third in the league in defense. It's one of those great postseason confrontations.
It really is, and yet sometimes I look at those numbers because I've done a couple Ravens games this year, and that defense is clearly not the unit it was in prior years, but what tends to balance it off is that their offense can take off every once in a while. Joe Flacco's been known to put up points in bunches, but they haven't done a lot of it lately. Now, the Patriots defense, the other factor here, is can they get it together and deal with that Raven passing game? Now, Derek Mason is the main threat, Todd Heap, and that's going to be a big part of the story, is how does that Patriots defense hold up? It's been a work in progress pretty much all season long. Can they get the job done again here?
outdoors, run the football in the playoffs, run the football. Well, Ray Rice, Willis McGahee give the Baltimore Ravens a potent ground game. Coming up, the last of the NFC wild cards when we continue. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Wild Card Weekend concludes in what should be the warmest of environs. The Green Bay Packers are heading back to the desert to face the defending NFC champion, Arizona Cardinals. We get the story from Dave Zorn.
The Arizona Cardinals and Green Bay Packers play for the second time in as many weeks, but with different circumstances on the line this week. Last week, the Packers flattened the Cardinals 33-7 in a game where Arizona pulled quarterback Kurt Warner in the second quarter. The Packers come into the game at a very high level, winning 7 of their last 8 games. Head coach Mike McCarthy says he feels like they're going to the playoffs at their very best.
I like the way our football team looks right now. I like the energy that they're playing with. I like the way they prepare. And I like the way they're focused. We're playing an opponent on the road. They're defending NFC champions. They won their division, so there's definitely some challenge of playing a little bit uphill, and that's the mindset we're taking into this game.
The Packers look to have avoided an injury scare as defensive back Charles Woodson suffered a shoulder strain in last Sunday's game and is expected to play on Sunday. The Cardinals weren't as lucky on the injury front. Pro Bowl defensive back Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie suffered a bruised kneecap, and defensive end Calais Campbell broke his thumb, but both are expected to play. The same can't be said for wide receiver Anquan Boldin. He suffered both a knee and ankle injury last week. He is questionable for Sunday's game. The Cardinals are aware they haven't played at their best against the Packers this season and should be favored over the Cardinals. Defensive tackle Darnell Dockett says there's plenty of reasons to like the Packers, but the underdog role suits he and his teammates just fine.
Great receivers, great quarterback, great defense. It's going to be a tough game for us, and, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody's going to pick them to win this weekend, so, you know, that's okay. You know, we still got to take care of business.
It'll be the third time the Packers will play the Cardinals at University of Phoenix Stadium this season. The first came in Week 3 of the preseason, where the Packers also beat the Cardinals 44-37. This will be the first time something of relevance will be on the line between the two teams as the Packers and Cardinals meet in the NFC wildcard playoff game. Sunday's kickoff is set for around 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Dave Zorn for Pro Football Weekly.
Wayne, maybe it's just me, but I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that of the 4 games this weekend, this is the one everybody's looking forward to the most. Maybe no accident that it comes as the last game of the weekend. I know it's the 3rd of 3 rematches, but the bottom line is that these are two teams that can score points in bunches, they can do it fast, and they can play pretty good defense when they want, particularly the Green Bay Packers. The question in this game, I think, is which Arizona Cardinal team is going to show up. That's the one part that nobody's been able to figure out all season long.
You know, Hub, you mentioned they played a couple of times. They played the 3rd week of the preseason, the dress rehearsal, and when the veterans were in there, the Packers dominated. Last week, they played what amounted to even less than a preseason game as far as Arizona was concerned. They hardly played their starters in that ball game, and the Packers prevailed big time. I don't think any of us really have a feel for, you know, it looks like the Packers match up pretty well with this team, but I don't think anyone really knows because they haven't seen these two teams play a real game.
Well, they haven't, but I look at the Arizona Cardinals and what they've done against other teams, and they are just a little too erratic for me. I know they got on a roll in the playoffs last year, and they rode it all the way to the Super Bowl, but this is a team that can look like world beaters one week and just trounce the Minnesota Vikings, and then the very next week go out and lay an egg against weak AFC West competition, and you've got to worry about the injury to Anquan Boldin. To me, in many respects, that could be the story of this football game. He's been their go-to guy recently, and if Boldin isn't healthy, I think the Cardinals are going to have some problems.
Other factor to look at in this game is that although Aaron Rodgers has had a tremendous year at quarterback so far with a 103.2 quarterback rating, 30 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions, this is his first playoff game as a starting quarterback, and you always wonder about that. So it should be a good one, Green Bay at Arizona. The Handicapper's Corner features Chuck Esposito, casino manager, race and sports for the Tropicana in Las Vegas.
And Wayne, it is our pleasure to welcome Chuck in now. And Chuck, you know, it's certainly the second season for NFL teams. I know that a lot of NFL fans get recharged after some bad games earlier in the year. And while there's less football games, I'm guessing the action gets a little heavier, maybe more volume on each individual game as playoff time comes around. Am I close on that?
You're absolutely
you're right on target, Hub. I mean, the action will be phenomenal with these games coming up this weekend. You've got some very public teams in there with the Patriots, Eagles, Cowboys, and Packers, and three rematches in the early round game. So a lot of action here in the books in Vegas.
You know, Chuck, that is something, and I've been doing this a long time, over 30 years. I can't ever remember three rematches from the week earlier, the first week in the playoffs. And you look at the way some of those games were played, particularly that Jets-Cincinnati game. Now, I know the game moves from New York to Cincinnati, and I know the Bengals weren't playing for anything, but I got to believe the way that the Jets physically trounced the Bengals might have a little impact on that number.
Well, it does a little bit. The game's at three. I think if that had not been the outcome in that last game, you would have seen a higher number. The Jets have a lot of success running the ball and stopping the run. The Bengals didn't play a lot of guys on defense. Benson didn't play. But I think this number is going to go up by kickoff. I think you're looking at a rookie quarterback with Sanchez who's going to have to maybe win this game through the air. And I think the betting public will back Cincy come kickoff time.
Chuck, the other one I'm curious about, Wayne was just talking about that Cardinal-Packer game and the fact that we have no idea what Cardinal team is going to show up. And while it was lopsided last week, clearly neither team was there 100%. How do you handicap the Cardinals?
Well, it's very difficult. They are one of those erratic teams. They made a lot of noise in the playoffs last year, were able to get to the big game. But the betting public has already made a decision here. The game opened up the Cardinals 3. It's dropped down to 2. So they're backing the Packers, even though that meaningless game, the last game of the season, didn't mean a lot. A lot of one-sided action coming across our counter here in Vegas.
Chuck Esposito, our handicapper from the Tropicana, Las Vegas. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, listening to Chuck Esposito just now, it occurs to me one of the things that is radically different about playoff games, and particularly the first weekend of the playoffs, is the difference in pressure, the difference in experience, and what happens to teams that are depending on young players. Now, you look at the New York Jets going into Cincinnati. Mark Sanchez at quarterback has had a nice year, not a great year. He wasn't really the difference last week in that thumping of the Bengals that got the Jets to the playoffs. Now they go on the road. It's going to be a whole different ballgame for Mr. Sanchez. You look at the night game on Saturday, where you've got the Philadelphia Eagles, and you know the Cowboys are going to stack to try and take away DeSean Jackson. Can the rookie Jeremy Maclin come up big on the other side, much like he did late in the season for the Eagles? And for the Cowboys, you know, Miles Austin is not a rookie, but he's a young, inexperienced player. He's become the focal point of that offense. Does he get it done? We talked in our preview about the Patriots and the Ravens, and what about Julian Edelman, the young wide receiver? He's going to get his first NFL start. It could be really intriguing for him. And then finally, when the Packers go to Arizona, Wayne, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers' first playoff game. What about the rookie Beanie Wells, who's been part of the resurgent running game for the Arizona Cardinals? It will be the young players and how they respond to pressure that define this first weekend of the playoffs.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Ravens and Chargers radio networks. Randy Meyer is our producer-engineer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.